Hello and welcome to the Anita Posch Show, where I'm here to help you understand Bitcoin, realize its humanitarian implications for the world, and gain financial sovereignty. I'm your host, Anita Posch, and this is episode 175 of my show. I recently had the pleasure of joining Lunatic Coin on his insightful podcast. In this episode, I share my journey from urban planning to becoming a passionate Bitcoin educator and human rights activist. Our conversation takes us through my efforts and experiences in educating people about Bitcoin, focusing on African countries like Zimbabwe and Zambia. I answer questions like, why is Bitcoin a tool for financial empowerment, especially in countries suffering from hyperinflation and economic challenges? What is the purpose of my initiative Bitcoin for Fairness? And what are the unique advantages of Bitcoin, especially in comparison to stable coins like USDT? Sounds interesting? Please subscribe to my free newsletter to receive more content like this at anita.link/weekly. And now, join us as we explore Bitcoin's real-world applications, its role in overcoming economic and political challenges, and its potential to create a fairer financial system. Happy listening.
Hello, Anita.
Hi, Luna. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining. I'm really looking forward for this conversation. We have crossed paths a few times around the globe, and I know very well about your work. But for the ones who doesn't maybe speak English and don't know about it, what is your background and what took you to Bitcoin?
Yeah, my background is basically in urban planning. So I'm an urban planning by design in a way. but pretty early on, that was in 1997, I finished my studies. And then the internet came to Austria. You know, I got my first email in 1997 and I was like, wow, this is going to change the world. I want to do something with it. And so I basically left my profession behind and I started to become a web developer and web designer. And I did that like with my own e-commerce products, projects. And I was self-employed most of the time, but also working for companies. And so in 2015, 2016, I thought to myself, so I've done that long enough. I'm looking for something that makes more sense than just to sell stuff to people, you know, in e-commerce. And I was looking the whole year 2016 for something that I want to do in the future, something that really makes sense and is a contribution to the world in a world, a little bit more than just building shopping sites, you know. And I was in 2016, I was in Berlin half a year. And actually afterwards, I realized that the Berlin scene was very much Bitcoin already. But I haven't met anyone. I haven't heard of it really. And so in 2017, early 2017, I listened to a keynote about Bitcoin and open blockchains. And that was basically the moment where the penny dropped or the Satoshi dropped. And I understood that this is a technology, a new form of internet money that will disrupt or change the world forever as the internet did. Like communication on the internet. I mean, if we think back to 1997 or to the early 2000s, we didn't even have websites like that we have now. We didn't have WhatsApp, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. And see how that has changed the world. And I was sure that this is also going to happen with Bitcoin. And that's the reason why I, in early 2017, started to intensively educate myself with the resources that were out there about Bitcoin and decided that I want to be a part of this journey. I also knew, well, I thought I'm a good educator in that sense. You know, I always enjoyed doing keynotes and my people around me told me, oh, you're really good in explaining those technological things. And so I thought I could become a Bitcoin educator one day. And so I started immediately, but always had this, you know, having my full-time earnings out of online marketing and web design and at the side. Like I spent a lot of time to educate myself before I went into the space to tell my learnings to others and to share my knowledge.
We share stories a little bit because it was also early 2017 before the bull run where I connected with Bitcoin. I was always honest with this. I didn't even know what's the difference between Bitcoin and crypto and shitcoins. I was into everything. I just knew that there was something there important and I needed to keep on investigating. And my fall down the Bitcoin rabbit hole was hard as yours, because after that, yeah, you were everywhere. You really started your education journey. And in recent years, you put your focus in what many call the global south. But I would say mostly in South of African countries like Zimbabwe or Zambia, at least last year. All under your initiative, Bitcoin for Fairness. What is this? What is Bitcoin for Fairness? And what is its main goal, Anita?
Yes. So, as I said before, very early on, I realized the potential of Bitcoin to be a catalyst and to be of help for people who are, let's say, underprivileged or not as privileged as we are. I say we now in Europe. I'm from Austria. And I decided to put my focus in my work on that topic. Like, I heard, okay, Zimbabwe is a country with hyperinflation, or Argentina, Venezuela, they need Bitcoin the most because it's a non-inflationary hard asset. As you say, I mean, at the beginning, I didn't understand what that means at all, but I thought, yeah, that sounds good. I believe it. But then I wanted to go there and see, is this really the case? So in 2020, I went to Zimbabwe the first time to research basically and learn on the ground, are people using it? What are they using it for? How is the monetary situation in general? How is it to live in a country that has inflation of like 600%? So I put that focus on the topic of Bitcoin in Africa right back then and did also my first podcast interviews with people from there. And in, I don't know exactly, 2021, I thought I want to do something more than just like educate people from my desk and do podcasts, which is great. I mean, it's great, but I had the urge to go out there. I wanted to travel. I wanted to be a nomad and also share this knowledge where I thought it makes more sense, because here in Europe, for instance, I mean, there is a lot of regulation and backlash in a way against Bitcoin. And there, the people really need it and they really want to use it. It's not like in Europe where people tell me, so why do I need Bitcoin? Because the use case or the main properties of Bitcoin make it such that it's a great tool for people who are in countries where you have foreign exchange controls, where you have broken banks, where you have authoritarian leaderships which shut down your bank accounts and things like that. And so I decided to found this organization, or let's call it an initiative, Bitcoin for Fairness. And with that, I wanted to bring in other people to help facilitate and build communities and Bitcoin educational projects in these countries. And I started with Zimbabwe and Zambia. I was in South Africa visiting Bitcoin Ikasi. And wherever I went, I tried to bring infrastructure like a Raspi Blitz, a Lightning node. I brought hardware wallets, tracers to give it away to the people and to do hardware wallet workshops and things like that. So the goal is that people build their own communities on the ground, and share their knowledge, then what they got from me, basically, or from the global Bitcoin educator space, to support them in these first steps.
Very important, this part that you just said. No? So the goal is to educate people on them building their own communities, no, so that the movement can keep on going without Anita, without anybody else going there and visiting. And I know you've been in different countries, but I want to ask, because probably it's not going to a country, it's not going just to the capital or going to one city. You probably have been to different areas and different communities. Do you have like a rough number to how many communities have you been in these countries?
I mean, communities been, there was Bitcoin Ekasi in Mossel Bay, and then, you know, they are just starting up. So I have been there. I went, was in Ghana. I met with the Bitcoin Cowries there. We did a meetup where they came and I helped them set up Phoenix Wallet, and we like got other people interested together. And Bitcoin Cowries, Kumi is now doing his own things. You know, he's helping others to set up their own communities, which I most of the time see on Twitter, and I'm very I think it's awesome, and I'm appreciating that a lot. And then we have in Zambia the Bitcoin for Fairness Zambia community, which is a group of, I would say, about 70 people. They have their own WhatsApp group. And then in Zimbabwe, there is Bitcoin Reach from Alexandria. I met him in early 2022, I think, yes. And then from there on, he started his WhatsApp group in Zimbabwe, which has now, I think, 300 people. And they are also doing meetups. And in Zambia, what I love to see is that there are more people getting into. We now have two young women. They want to start their own initiative called Bitcoin Banamayo, who are starting now their own educational project in Zambia out of Bitcoin for Fairness Zambia. And there are the great thing is when you are there on the ground, you can build local connections, you build local trust. I also met some Bitcoin traders there, or let's call them crypto traders, because to be honest, they exchange also other cryptocurrencies. Of course, they are not Bitcoin only. They need to make money somehow. But it's great to have this trusted context, because now I can help people who want to send money to Zambia, for instance, or to the Senegal. We had that the last time, and I can send them to my trading contact basically there. And traders are just money exchangers. It's not like I want to make money from that. It's I'm exchanging it as a service for you. So there was a case where someone on Twitter asked me, I want to send Bitcoin to a friend in Senegal. They have their CFA, and I don't know how to do it because this person is not a Bitcoiner. She doesn't know how to exchange it then to her local currency. So I connected him with Mr. Mulos in Zambia, and they made that. He sent him Bitcoin, and Mr. Mulos sent the money into the mobile money account of that person in Senegal. And I think that's also the great use case of Bitcoin. You can use it in combination with the national currencies, of course, because most people still use national currencies. I mean, everything else would be a lie or a joke if you would say that. Yeah, it's still not so many people who are using Bitcoin in Zimbabwe or Zambia. We're still at the beginning, and that's why these initiatives are now growing and growing, because there was nothing at the beginning.
When you, because of course Bitcoin Ekasi was already working when you were there, but some of the others that you mentioned probably started meanwhile you were there because of your work, because of you trying to spin up those communities and find people interested in Bitcoin. How do you plan that? Do you always target like cities? Have some of these communities started in rural areas? What's the beginning? What's the first moments of spinning up a community in those countries?
I think you need to go into the cities, into the urban centers, because you need people who have the capacity to even learn and to use Bitcoin. If you don't have electricity all day, if you don't have internet, if you don't have at least a few US dollars value of money to use it, to try it, to open a Phoenix wallet on your phone, and you can receive some satoshis, yes, from me, that's how I set up people, but then you need to do something with it. And you need also to have the headspace to learn it. And I learned that that's better to start that in urban areas where you also can get together more people who have that space and also the resources to educate others and to organize these kinds of things and to have the locations and whatever to grow from there. And also the basic education. Yeah. So unless you live in a rural area and you are very well integrated and you already have some sort of infrastructure or a small economy. Unless you have that, I wouldn't go into a rural area and start the Bitcoin for Fairness community there or something like that, because that's not happening in my sense. Yeah. So I think it's like with every technology, it starts there where you already have infrastructure. And from there, it will go into the rural areas.
It's funny because thinking about infrastructure, I was thinking about internet, no? How important it has to be that in your area you have internet coverage in any way, no? LAN or mobile or whatever. But then you mentioned about electricity. So we are also thinking about that kind of infrastructure, not even getting to the internet, but first of all, thinking about electricity. Do they have 24 hours electricity?
No, I mean, a lot of people don't. I mean, you can live with if you have 12 hours electricity because you can plug in your phone during the night, for instance. And then you can also use Bitcoin because you, like in Harare, where I was living, for instance, there was no electricity for 12 hours a day. It was only there by night. So, but during the day, although you didn't have electricity, like from the infrastructure, you could go out and in another area of town, there was electricity. So from there, you can use Bitcoin again. You know, it's not like there's a blackout in the whole area. So it works. But yes, there are many areas still where there is no electricity.
And about phone coverage, we are so used about smartphones. And then it was really interesting for me to discover the Machancura project. I don't know which conference was. I think it was in Argentina last year. And I was talking with him and he was explaining me and how it works. And I was able to transact with him some sats. And of course, for us Europeans, it feels like okay, it's cool, good technology, but maybe we don't understand how important it can be for some areas where the use of a smartphone is not such a common thing. Is that the case? Is something like Machancura very much needed in different areas in Africa?
Yes, it's a great bridging technology, I would say. Like you can onboard someone who doesn't have a smartphone in Zimbabwe, not in Zimbabwe with Machancura, in Zambia, for instance, in South Africa, I think in Ghana. So he has like 9 or 10 countries on his list. So the thing with it is only for me, you can only use it in your own country. You can't send it from Zambia to Ghana, for instance. And of course, the technology is depending on the mobile phone provider. So if they shut him out or shut Machancura off, then it's off, you know, so it's not uncensorable in that sense. But in general, yes, most people or a lot of people still have these old phones and no smartphones, whereas in towns you see most people do have smartphones, very old ones mostly, but they do. And the mobile money system, you may have heard of it, like mobile money in Zimbabwe is called Econet. There are different providers. In Zambia, I just can't remember the name, but that's working with the same technology as Machancura. Yeah, so you basically have a text menu where you can say, yes, now I want to send to that number, and then I press 2, and then it does send and receive and things like that. So a lot of people are used to this, so it would be a very familiar technology for them to use Bitcoin.
It's like communication companies becoming financial service providers, no? This is more or less what this mobile money would be?
Mobile money is that, yes, exactly. It's basically you send value or their national currency through SMS, basically it's text messages. It's called USSD, which is a protocol that is used. I mean, there's a video of mine on my YouTube channel where I used it, where you can see how it works.
In your experience, what changes in a community after opening to Bitcoin? Is there a common denominator, a common reaction that you can see after a few months from people that had not a knowledge about Bitcoin? What do they do after knowing about it?
Yeah, firstly, it's interesting that the communities grow. So there seems to be interest and there seems to be a story going on where people realize what the use case is. And like for instance, in Zambia, there are young men who came up to me and said to me, you know, I realized that Bitcoin can help me because I can't invest in any stocks, like in Apple stock or Facebook stock or whatever. I can't do that. And I wanted to have something where I can invest my hard-earned money in. And then I found Bitcoin and I can do it and I don't have to ask anyone. And I think one by one, each of these stories is building momentum and people won't go back. You know, if you have a positive experience in using Bitcoin, you will tell that to others because it's so unique and it helps you so much. And so, for instance, in the Zambian group, now people are interested in visiting the new mining site in Zambia, Gridless, the company from Kenya. They are building a new mining site in Zambia. And they asked me, can we go there? We want to see it. Other people said, we want to come to the Cape Town Bitcoin conference in January. And yes, that's something then what Bitcoin for Fairness, what we are trying to make happen also for them, like to, because people basically mostly can't afford to go to Cape Town. Or I think I would like to do a road trip maybe to the Zambian mining site with them. So yeah, the interest is growing. They start educating themselves about Bitcoin. And yeah, they also start their journey into the rabbit hole.
Do you see a change? Because now you mentioned about investing, also a general interest in mining, in the conferences, in getting to learn more about Bitcoin. But do you find a change in commerce, in merchants? Do you find a change in people starting to transact between them, to buy and sell goods between them, or some merchants that start to accept Bitcoin in those countries?
Yes, I mean, I'm not on the ground anymore, so it's difficult for me to say. But in Zambia, for instance, we have a restaurant owner in our community. And so we did our meetups there. We paid with Bitcoin, sure. So yes, they are also aiming to share Bitcoin knowledge with other small businesses. So that's the goal, for instance, of Bitcoin Banamayo. They want to teach especially women and small businesses. So these people who really sell the stuff on the streets and to tourists how to use Bitcoin. So I see it, yes.
This question was not a candid question. It's because we're getting to my main question of this conversation. That's why in first instance, I asked you a couple of months ago, like, hey, Anita, I would like to really talk with you. Because with your on-the-ground experience doing a tremendous work in educating and spinning up Bitcoin communities, you probably have something to tell me about in what use case Bitcoin really wins. And let me develop a little bit about this. Because I've been in El Salvador in 2021 and 2022 and also experienced how it is in a high inflation environment like Argentina. And in both places, I have realized that due to volatility, people prefer USDT, Tether, over Bitcoin. A coconut seller 2 years ago in El Salvador was really happy to accept Bitcoin. And the funny thing is that I recorded a little interview with her. And I asked, oh, do you hold Bitcoin? And she was telling me, yeah, sure, because this, you hold it bit by bit and with time it appreciates. And she was very happy. I got to meet the same person 2 years later. So the first meeting with her was in the bull run. I think Bitcoin was 68,000. The second meeting was right after FTX explosion. So Bitcoin was at 16,000. And I met her, and she was called Dina. And I said, Dina, what about Bitcoin? Do you still hold it? Do you still accept it? She was accepting it, so I knew that that was true. I said, yeah, I accept it. But every day, I go to an ATM and I sell it because I cannot deal with the volatility. And let's say that the inflation hedge case in the long or medium long run for many of us Europeans who are, let's say, we are wealthy or we have a nice quality of life, it's okay for us. But for these kind of countries, I realized that it was not the case, that it was not an easy thing to do. So it made me question, because I was going to a lot of these countries with the Bitcoin flag and wanting to orange peel as many as possible and say, hey, look, you have to start accepting this. This is very good, like the hardest money on earth, blah, blah. But then they teach me that maybe that's not the money, that is not as good as money as I thought in reality, in practice, no? So that made me think for many months, what is the real, like, what is the use case in where Bitcoin wins? And of course, I have my own answer to that question, but probably you also found yourself in the same situation as I was, no? That you start to realize, okay, maybe for the everyday or for everybody, this is not the best tool. So what is for you the winning case for Bitcoin? What are the use cases that you saw in Africa or in any of your trips around the world that give Bitcoin a better sense over things like Tether?
Yeah, I completely agree. One needs to be realistic about the living situation of people and their needs, and that they can't even afford to save, let's say, $50 a month. Because for a lot of people, $50 a month is what they have, you know, and they have 3 children. So yes, that's a little bit disheartening, but I lost that kind of enthusiasm already. So in that sense that I realized exactly what you said, people are stopping to use it again because they, and they don't understand, they, because how should they? They don't have the background we do. They can't see and all these words like non-inflationary hard asset to invest and to hedge against inflation and things like that. They have daily needs. And as such, of course, volatility, when you start in a bull run and then the bear market comes along, you sell everything. And because you need the money, I mean, it's great that she still is accepting it, I think, because that's a use case too. Otherwise, she wouldn't get the money from the Bitcoiners who come to El Salvador. So in her case, it's still a win, you know? And the volatility over the long term, we know that it will go down. We know that if you hold it long enough, like 5 years, 3 years, 5 years, then the chances of that you make more money out of it are actually very high. But we lived through those phases already. They didn't. And if you can't even afford to hold, let's say, $50 for 3 years, then it won't happen for you. But there are other people. So actually what she's doing is very clever. Exchange it immediately. And then I always try to tell people exactly that. You know, we have bull markets, we have bear markets. So prepare for that and save what you can save, money that you don't need. And now with Lightning and with self-custody wallets like Phoenix and Breeze, which are very easy to use, people can even save $5 for 3 years. But it's also in their minds, you know. I think a lot of people have never learned what saving means because they don't have the funds for it. So it's also a learning process. And speaking of the use cases where I think that really only Bitcoin is an alternative is when you combine the properties of Bitcoin, like the uncensorability, no one can take it away from you, not even your dictator. It's permissionless. If you use it in self-custody, no one needs to know that you have a wallet on your phone. And it's more private than any mobile money or any bank account. That makes it a fantastic tool, for instance, for human rights activists, for doing crowdfundings into countries where people can't receive other kinds of monies. It's, for instance, in Zambia, there is a lesbian rights group. And they were arrested that year and their bank accounts were closed. Same story with the Nigerian Feminist Coalition in 2020, I think, where the central bank shut down their bank account because they were collecting donations to support the demonstrations against police brutality. They spun up a Lightning node, a Bitcoin node, and started to receive donations again. If the ladies in Zambia had Bitcoin by that time, then no one could have shut down their bank account or their Bitcoin account. No, it's not an account, sorry. no one could take away or censor their Bitcoin. And I did a, which was actually a highlight this year, a Bitcoin workshop in at a human rights activists conference in Lusaka in April. And there were 50 human rights activists from all over Africa, and they learned all kinds of stuff about activism. And one part was freedom money. And there I did the Bitcoin workshop. And a few people came to me after that and said, wow, now I really understand. So basically what I can do is, because my organization, whenever I receive or we receive funds from abroad, the bank account is being closed and the government is basically marking us as a terrorist group. So we don't have access to that money anymore and it's being stolen. But with Bitcoin, as far as I understand now, I can receive that money in our organization and no one knows it and no one takes it away from me. And my organization is in 4 African countries. So basically, we could also share these funds, right? And no one can take it away and no one can hinder us from sending it into the other countries. And I said, yes, exactly. And that's for me the most important use case where you don't have, you have no other cryptocurrency that can do that. I know if people are Monero fans and they listen to it, they will say, no, but Monero is much more private. Yes, Monero is really a very private tool, but you won't find a lot of people on the ground in those countries who will exchange Monero into local currency for you or accept Monero. More people accept Bitcoin. So I also think in the long run, Bitcoin is appreciating in the price. I mean, I believe that. We've seen it in the last years. And it's a hard asset, non-inflationary, which Monero not really is. And so I think these actually are the most important use cases where only Bitcoin wins. And that's the reason why I work with Bitcoin only. And I bring that education to the world. And yes, I also agree. Most people use USDT, also in Zimbabwe. I spoke with a trader who makes like 300, 400,000 US dollars volume of trading from US dollars into cryptocurrency. And he says 80% of that is into Tether. And only 20% is into Bitcoin, because that are the people who know about the long-term appreciation, or the, let's say it doesn't even have to be appreciation, but compared to local currency, it's really less inflationary, because like in Zimbabwe, you have 700% inflation. You don't have that in Bitcoin. And we know that.
It's very interesting. I was listening to you and I was trying to play devil's advocate, no? And because I've been in that conversation with myself many times, no? And you could say that somebody could start accepting Tether also with a certain censorship resistance, because dictators will not figure it out that they are receiving Tether.
They won't know it maybe, but I mean, Tether can be shut down. Tether is a centralized company. And if like the US regulators don't want to have Tether anymore, they will shut it down from one day to the other. And that's what I always say is the danger in using Tether. I mean, if you use it to send and receive it and immediately you're not holding it, I think it's okay. But as soon as you think you can hold Tether for the next 5 years, you maybe can, but you may be in for a big surprise, and that's not a good surprise. So if you really want to save for the long term, I would use Bitcoin, especially in these countries.
This is one of the conclusions I always get to. And also that Bitcoin has not the danger of a DPEC, no? The risk of a DPEC. We saw that this happened not long ago with currencies like USDC that was supposed to be like the, I'm missing a word here, but the, like the most legal stable coin with all, it passed all regulations and it DPEC, no? So like Bitcoin cannot lose the PEC. It has no PEC. It's itself.
Yeah, you're completely right. Bitcoin can't DPEC from the US dollar. And the other thing is, I mean, a stable coin to the US dollar means you also have the inflation of the US dollar. So it's not non-inflationary. You also have, I don't know what the inflation with the US dollar at the moment is. I mean, I only know in Austria we have like 8% at the moment. That's also quite something. I mean, it's not comparable to countries like Nigeria or Zambia or Zimbabwe, where I have on average like maybe 25% inflation. Zimbabwe is like Venezuela, another level, really. So that's what I always say to people. But as you also mentioned, most people, you can't just go there and think, oh, I'm orange peeling them now. Then you hook up most people, install them the wallet of Satoshi, send them 200 Satoshis, and then they are like, wow, I orange peeled someone. You know what's going to happen? These people will never use it. They will forget about it. And now you told them to use a custodial wallet and you will never, ever contact them again and never tell them maybe you should move to a self-custody wallet now because you can do that and things like that. And that's why I think it's so important to understand the local situation, to meet, to find out who are the people who I really can orange peel, which will be sustainable. Because other than that, people might just like think this is a fad. Yeah, I mean, okay, that was now really a scam. So that's why I think it's so important to have people on the ground who use it, who live it, who can show it to their neighbors and friends. And that's the way we also have sustainable education. Because these people on the ground will make sure they meet them again at the meetups, and then they can bring new like education to them. Like, there's a new wallet, use it now. It works like that. Better you use that wallet now. Because we are in a fast moving environment where also wallet developments and are fast. You know, I mean, how often have I changed my own Lightning wallets? I'm always thinking about which wallet am I now really recommending to the people, because I also did that. You mentioned that before with the mobile connectivity, internet, mobile data. I mean, you have places in these areas where you have mobile data, but for instance, some wallets don't work because the mobile data isn't good enough. And so you can't just say, use this wallet because it might not work in their area. So that's also the reason why with Bitcoin for Fairness, I've decided now I still will go to several countries, not only in Africa, but this year will be the focus on Africa again. And at the same time, I'm just now building a online learning program for aspiring Bitcoin educators and community leaders in the Global South, where they can apply for a scholarship and get a seat for free in my online learning program, so for a year, so that they are then prepared to give that knowledge to their peers in a long-term sustainable way and not just going there, which is great. You know, when I do like talks there or workshops, I think that's fantastic. But I think it needs long-term accompanying them. I think that's the right word, because it's a fast changing space. Yeah.
I'm going to put on one last use case that Tether will never be able to compete with, because Tether is not the Fed, is not the central bank of the US dollar. So they cannot issue new money, at least not in the way we understand it. Of course, they can print more Tether and they can make a business out of it and trying to not lose the peg. But there is mining. And I think that in Africa, mining is a use case that we are starting to see examples, like, for example, the famous one in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, in which they managed to install few mining containers. And there is this park that has been able to get some nice revenue from that. Is this also something that you have experienced, your trips, the mining component as one unique character of Bitcoin?
Yes, I do, because I tried to help others in Zimbabwe to set up their own mines with the help of someone of the Bitcoin for Fairness community who donated 5 older ones, not the newest ASICs, to a guy I know in Zimbabwe who is having his own farm. So he's producing chili and peppers and things like that. I had him on the show, and he was donated these machines, and he has solar, And he had the possibility to use the solar power basically for free because he already had the equipment. And he started Bitcoin mining in Zimbabwe. And of course, that's a great way to mine your own Bitcoin and to receive money for the work you do there. And if you have an abundance of sun and if you already have solar power and can use some of that electricity, I mean, you need excess solar power, then it's a great start. You can even do that in a very small setting. And he told me back then that he made like $20 a day in Bitcoin, which I think is very much given that his electricity was free and also the machines were donated. The story about that is that sadly enough, in Zimbabwe, people do not have enough to eat and do not have enough money. So people steal things. And one day the solar power setup was gone. So basically he lost his inverters and they are very expensive, but they left the ASICs behind because they didn't know what that is. So now I'm not sure. I think he's mining again, but that was also a great learning to see that it's sad that infrastructure gets stolen on a regular basis there. And so he had to buy the new inverters and such. But I think really, if you have excess electricity or if you are starting a small hydropower plant, Bitcoin mining is really a tool that can help you to offset the initial costs and sell your excess electricity. Yes.
Anita, it was great to talk with you and to have your perspective here about all of these topics and these hard questions that we Bitcoiners, if we are honest with ourselves, we one day go through and we question ourselves. And it was nice to have you here, first of all, and also to have your opinion. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for the invitation, Luna. Bye.
That's it. Thanks for joining. If you've enjoyed this, please subscribe to my newsletter at anita.link/weekly to get all my updates into your mailbox and recommend it to your friends. Music, Late Truth by Audio Hertz. Until next time at the Anita Posh Show.